Treat Me, the Open Medicine Foundation's Mammoth ME/CFS and Long COVID Survey Results by Court Johnson, July 11th, 2025. Quote, there are inherent uncertainties in the individual response, but at a group level, it should provide a solid base for interpretations, end quote, the authors. The Open Medicine Foundation said it would focus more on treatments a year or so ago, and it has made good on that promise with the results from its massive Treat Me survey. The study, called Patient-Reported Treatment Outcomes in ME/CFS and Long COVID, was recently published in none other than the August Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, PNAS, journal. The Treat Me survey is the most extensive attempt yet to assess the efficacy of most of the mainstream and some not-so-mainstream attempts to get well in people with ME/CFS and Long COVID. Almost 4,000 people with ME/CFS and long COVID, split almost equally, answered questions about 150 drug, supplement, and non-pharmacological treatments. Brain retraining programs, brain stimulation, lorazepam, Ativan, Clonopin, clonazepam, diet, and physical therapy were not assessed. The study approach. To encourage more accurate results, patients were asked to review treatments only if they had a good idea of their effects. The participants were asked, how were your symptoms affected by the following treatments? And given a series of options from approximately February 2023 to February 2024, with a three-month break in the middle. Five core symptoms, fatigue or low energy, post-exertional malaise, POTS, brain fog, and unrefreshing sleep, associated with the IOM's core diagnostic criteria for ME/CFS, were included in the primary assessment. The treatment's impact on pain was not included. These were much better, moderately better, slightly better, unchanged or unsure, slightly worse, moderately worse, and much worse. To evaluate the patient-reported effects of treatments, the authors produced a figure called Net Assessment Score, or NAS, which was based on patients' positive and negative responses to each treatment. The NAS score for each treatment was then compared to a reference treatment, patient reports for a vitamin C supplement, and the results were analyzed using a two-proportion Z-test. So net assessment score equals positive assessments minus negative assessments times 100 divided by total number of assessments. If I'm reading it right, because any level of improvement or worsening is included in NAS or net assessment score, that NAS by itself does not tell us much about the degree of effectiveness. For example, NAS does not give a treatment extra points for producing much better results. Instead, it tells us which treatments receive the most positive and the least negative responses in the most people. Results. The study found that people with long COVID and ME/CFS were similar symptomatically and responded to treatments similarly. The way NAS was produced resulted in treatments like CoQ10, PEA, Qkermin, and melatonin, which rarely produced moderate or much better effects, but were reported to have positive effects by many people, ending up on the list. Some treatments in this group, ibisaline, ivabradine, IgG, heparin, and Maraviroc, did, however, produce a significant percentage of moderately to much better results. At this point in the text version of the article, you can see the orange and yellow bars on the left for moderately much better results in the graph, which sums up the results of the survey. As the paper pointed out, most of the top 20 treatments with the highest NAS are well known. Treatments that moved the needle. It was encouraging to see that of the 150 or so treatments assessed, at least 30% of patients reported some positive effect in 120 of them. I was most interested, though, in treatments that moved the needle, i.e., treatments that were more likely to produce moderately and much better responses. These were found in an appendix. A separate list of much better responses was not included for all the treatments. Note that this analysis did not assess the probability statistics. The appendix indicated that patients reported that 21 treatments resulted in moderate to much better improvement over 30% of the time. It also reported that between 20 and 30% of the time, 41 other treatments resulted in moderate to much better improvement. All told, 62 treatments were deemed by greater than 20% of patients to make them, quote, moderately / much better, end quote. While patients clearly had searching to do, the study suggested that a wide variety of treatments have the potential to at least moderately improve the symptoms of ME/CFS patients. Check out Table 3 in the supporting information. You can see a link to that here at this point in the text version of the article. It lists the responses of all the treatments. Table 3 is found about 6 or 7 pages down from the top. The column I used, percentage of moderate to much better responses, is outlined in blue. The percentage of negative responses is beside it to the right. The top 21 treatments. Now, these include over 30% of patients reported moderate to much better improvement. IVIG, 64%. Low-dose naltrexone, 60%. IV saline, 52%. Ketamine, 43%. Ivabradine, 44%. Maraviroc, 41%. Ketotifen and H2RA, 40%. Ketotifen without H2RA, 29%. Enoxaparin, or unfractionated heparin, 40.1%. Guanfacine and NAC, 39%. Guanfacine without NAC, 12%. Cardioselective beta blockers, 38%. Corticosteroids, 37%. Pacing, 37%. Stimulants, 35%. Triple therapy, anticoagulants, 33%. Tolovid, more than 15 days, 36%. Mestinon, 32%. Abilify, less than 2 milligrams, 32%. Less is generally more with Abilify. More than 2 milligram dropped to 9%. Vidicinals, 31%. Natokinase, or lumbrokinase, and serapeptase, 31%. Propanolol, 31%. And bupropion, 30%. Assessment. IVIG, the big surprise. IVIG is expensive and hard to get. But of the 91 people who got a hold of it, almost two-thirds reported moderate to much improvement. The NAS symptom assessment suggested that IVIG is able to help fatigue at 55.4%, post-exertional malaise at 46.7%, POTS 55.8%, and brain fog 50.8% frequently. Additionally, the NAS graph of the top 20 treatments showed that IVIG was the treatment most often associated with a, quote, much better, end quote, response. Nothing in the ME/CFS literature made me suspect IVIG's efficacy would be so high. Both Dr. Ruhoy and Dr. Kaufman like it, and Dr. Klimas has said that the pooling of IVIG from a large population gives it such a tremendous advantage that if an infection is the problem, then protection provided by the product can be so complete that you don't need to know what virus is present. You just need to boost your immune functioning. Its high efficacy in this survey may, in part, be due to the doctors who use it knowing which patients it is most likely to help. It suggests that immunomodulators may play a key role in treating ME/CFS over time. And you can see a link at this point in the text version of the article to another Health Rising blog entitled The Case for IVIG Treatment in Chronic Fatigue Syndrome, Fibromyalgia, Small Fiber Neuropathy, and POTS. Now moving on to the other needle-moving treatments. Others. Low-dose naltrexone's high efficacy rate, 60% and nearly 1,000 responses, suggests that targeting immune activity in the brain may be highly beneficial. The NAS calculation found LDN improved fatigue or low energy 41.5%, PEM 33.2%, and brain fog 42.3%. LDN is often used for pain, but pain was not assessed in this study. While being mindful that only 30 people had tried ketamine, its high efficacy at 43% also suggests that brain-targeting drugs may be helpful. And you can see a link at this point in the text version of the article to another Health Rising blog called A Ketamine Revolution for Depression and Pain, Spravato, Fibromyalgia, and ME/CFS. On to ivabradine. Ivabradine's success rate was not surprising given that it appears that it, more than other drugs, is helpful with POTS. The relatively good efficacy for ivabradine, beta blockers, and propranolol indicates what the important role these drugs can play in those with orthostatic intolerance and dysautonomia. Only 58 people had tried Maraviroc, the drug Bruce Patterson introduced to the field, but the good response rate at 41% suggested he may be onto something. The good response rates from heparin, triple therapy, and natokinase, lumbrokinase, and serapeptase suggested that clearing out blood clots can be very helpful. While supplements did not do well as a group, two drugs suggested that adding them can be very helpful. Adding ketotifen to an H2RA boosted its efficacy dramatically, 40-29%. Similarly, adding NAC to guanfacine more than tripled the number of people who reported that it moderately to much better improved their symptoms, 39%. Guanfacine without NAC, only 12%. The tried and true treatments. It was interesting to see which treatments had been tried the most. With an average duration of illness of around 13 years, this group has been around long enough to let us know what has worked over time and what kinds of treatments have become widely adopted among patients. Check out the most tried treatments, top to bottom, and the percentage of people who reported they produced moderate to much better results for them. 32 treatments were assessed by more than 300 people. The big losers were supplements, 17 of which made the list, but which, unless they were paired with something, rarely made the top 62 most efficacious treatments. Note, though, that a compound treatment called vendicinals, which consists of various mast cell reducers, anti-inflammatory and antioxidant herbs, and natural compounds, did pretty well in long COVID. 58 people tried it, and 31% of those reported moderate to much better improvement. The top 32 most tried treatments in descending order: fluids, electrolytes, 2,860 people tried them, 26% of those reported moderate to much better improvement. Antihistamines, H1RA, second and third generation, 1,474 people tried them, 22% of those reported moderate to much better improvement. Check out below to see how combining H1RA and H2RA antihistamines seems to work better than using H1RA antihistamines alone, and how adding ketotifen to H2RAs may work even better. B-complex, 961 people tried it, 8% reported moderate to much better improvement. Compression stockings, 952 people tried those. Compression stockings positively help 66% of people, but moderately help 24%. low-dose naltrexone, LDN has been well-tried, 951 responses, and has one of the highest moderate to much better effectiveness ratings. Omega-3 complex, DHA, and EPA. 818 people tried them. 7.6% said they made them feel better. Pacing, 803 people tried it. 37% reported moderate to much better improvement. Only 803 people reported that they've tried pacing, yet pacing's 37% moderate to much better effect on symptoms suggested it's one of the most effective things to do. B12 injection. 760 people tried this. 20% reported moderate, much better improvement. B12 injections may be the oldest treatment on this list. And at 20% of people reporting that it produced moderate to much better effectiveness, it's still hanging in there. SSRI antidepressants minus fluvoxamine. 731 people tried them. 16% reported moderate to much better improvement. The different kinds of antidepressants all clocked at about 15 to 20% moderate to much better effectiveness, except for bupropion. Now, 172 people tried that and rated at 30% for moderate to much better improvement. Aspirin. 636 people tried that. 11% reported moderate to much better improvement. Omega-3-6 or omega-369, 573 people tried it. 6.3 reported moderate, much better improvement. Coenzyme Q10. Many people have tried CoQ10, and more does indeed seem to be better. Although the percentage of people reporting moderate to significant improvements, even at the highest dose, was relatively small, at 14%. CoQ10 at 100 to 200 milligrams a day, 566 people tried that, and 6% of them noted meaningful improvement. 382 people tried 50 to 100 milligrams a day, and only 8% of them reported the same. People who took more than 200 milligrams of CoQ10 per day, however, and that was 377 people, rated it at 14% for meaningful improvement. NAC, as with CoQ10, noticed the jump in NAC's effectiveness at the higher doses. NAC of less than 600 milligrams a day, 562 people tried that, and 8% reported moderate to much better improvement. NAC at more than 600 milligrams per day, 352 people tried that, so a comparable number, but more than twice, 20% reported moderate to much better improvement. So I think I'll be increasing my NAC dose. Also, that while guanfacine plus NAC has been less tried, adding NAC to guanfacine appeared to boost its effectiveness dramatically. H2RA, famotidine, 551 people tried it, 21% reported moderate to much better improvement. D-ribose, 548 people tried it, 10% reported moderate to much better improvement. D-ribose was a big hit a decade or two ago, but according to this survey, it has not stood the test of time. Amitriptyline and other TCA antidepressants. 529 people tried them. 15% reported moderate, much better improvement. Green tea matcha, EGCG. 485% tried this. 4% reported moderate to much better improvement. I'm not sure if that means the whole herbal green tea and matcha or some kind of extract. Curcumin, 480% tried that, and that, of course, is a derivative of turmeric, and different derivatives have different bioavailability, so you have to look into that. 11% of people, anyways, of those 480 people reported moderate to much better improvement. Natokinase and lumbrokinase, 475 people tried it, 27% reported moderate to much better improvement. And I suppose that that's a combination of those two anti-clotting enzymes. And The next one is natokinase and lumbrokinase plus serrapeptase. I suppose that's taking all three together. 430 people tried that, and 30% reported moderate to much better improvement. These are anti-clotting supplements, and with a 27% moderate to much better improvement rate, they were one of the most effective supplements. However, I will note that after looking all three up on ChatGPT, lumbrokinase, which is actually a derivative of certain species of earthworms, generally is by prescription only, whereas the other two can be found easily as supplements. Beta blockers or ivabradine. 458 people tried this. 38% reported moderate to much better improvement. Quercetin. 422 people tried it. 13.3% reported moderate to much better improvement. SNRIs, or selective norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors, 407 people tried those. 21% reported moderate to much better improvement. And the one caveat I would add there is careful of SNRIs if you have anything like HPOTS or hyperadrenergic POTS. Melatonin, 1 to 3 milligrams. 407 people tried it. 16% reported moderate to much better improvement. Stimulants such as Vyvanse, Adderall, Ritalin, Focalin, Dexedrine, and others. 427 people tried them. 35% reported moderate to much better improvement. The survey suggests that while they can have more negative side effects, stimulants are more effective at enhancing energy than mitochondrial supplements. But at what cost? Antihistamines, H1RA plus H2RA combo. 352 people tried them. 38% of those reported moderate to much better improvement. Among all the MCAS or mast cell activation syndrome medications, combining H1RA and H2RA antihistamines were the most effective. Vitamin C, oral liposomal. 330 people tried it. 8% reported moderate to much better improvement. Assessment. The fact that fluid, electrolytes, and compression stockings rank high on the list indicates that, at least in this knowledgeable patient population, the word on POTS orthostatic intolerance has been received. Similarly, the fact that one type of antihistamine, H1RA, had been tried by about 40% of the patients indicates how far mast cell activation syndrome has penetrated the ME/CFS patient population. The greatly increased efficacy rate, 38% of the H1RA plus H2RA group, suggested that patients taking H1RA only might want to add an H2RA antihistamine. The big surprise for me was how few people, 20%, have tried pacing, given how often it was efficacious at 37%, and how long it's supposedly been a mainstay in managing ME/CFS. An extremely uncontroversial approach to managing ME/CFS that almost any ME-literate doctor will recommend. Was this due to fewer long COVID patients embracing it? According to NAS, pacing was found to help frequently with fatigue, 82.7%, post-exertional malaise, it helped 62.6% of the time, brain fog, 71.2%, and POTS. Not seeing a number there for POTS. The word has clearly gotten out about blood clots. I was surprised by how many people, mostly long COVID patients, had tried natokinase, lumbrokinase, 475 of them, and impressed by the relatively good response rate with serrapeptase, 30%. Note that by itself, serrapeptase had a low, moderate, much better response rate at only 11%. I was also surprised that so many people had tried stimulants, 457 in fact, which had one of the highest response rates, 37%, moderately to much better, but also produced some significant negative responses. Types of treatments. Mast cell activation syndrome treatments. MCAS treatments were among the most commonly effective treatments. Of the 15 MCAS treatments assessed, only two were rated as moderate to much better by less than 10% of patients, four by between 10% and 20% of patients, and eight by between 20 and 30% of patients. Two were reported by over 30% of patients, ketotifen and H2RA, 40%, and H1RA and H2RA combo, 38%, to moderately much improve their symptoms. Antivirals and antibacterials. All of the anti-herpes viruses drugs, such as famciclovir, valganciclovir, valacyclovir, and acyclovir, were rated by between 20 and 30% of patients to moderately much improve their symptoms. Of the antibiotics, doxycycline, less than 50 milligrams and more than 100 milligrams, was rated by between 20 to 30% of patients to moderately to much improve their symptoms. Patients should stay away from sulfamethoxolone drugs, which had low efficacy and high rates of side effects. Neuropsychiatric drugs. Except for bupropion, 172 people tried that and 30% of them found it deserved a rating of moderate to much better, with less than 20% of patients reporting significant improvements. SNRIs or SSRIs, antidepressants, produced impressive results. Two old standbys, Lyrica and gabapentin, both scored fairly well, 26% moderate, much better improvement. Low-dose Abilify, 32%, also appears here to stay and shows how one doctor, Dr. Hector Bonilla at Stanford, can make an impact. 20 to 30% of respondents reported, though, that several of these drugs produced negative effects. Gut enhancers. None of the gut enhancers, colostrum, lactoferrin, various kinds of probiotics, butyrate, were reported by more than 20% of patients to moderately or much improve their symptoms. Mitochondrial enhancers. Go high with them if you go at all. In general, the mitochondrial enhancers did not do well. Most surprising and disappointing was the fact that only 18% of the 77 responders reported that oxaloacetate made them moderately or much better. Did they not take enough of it? Or is it that they fit within the roughly 20% of strong responders found in other studies on oxaloacetate? Over 500 people tried D-ribose, but only 10% reported that this formerly very popular supplement made them moderately or mostly better. In general, the survey suggested that if you're going to try a mitochondrial supplement, go high. ECCG, less than 400 milligrams per day, 7%. More than 400 milligrams per day was, however, 20%. So that's a big difference if you take over 400 milligrams of ECCG. CoQ10, less than 15 milligrams a day, only 8% of that rated it as providing a meaningful improvement, whereas 50 to 100 milligrams per day, 8% also, and then 100 to 200 milligrams per day of CoQ10, 6%, interesting. But more than 200 milligrams a day produced a result of 14%. CoQ10 has been well tried with hundreds of people providing responses for each dose. Mitoquinol, a form of CoQ10, on the other hand, did better with 22% of the 49 responders reporting it moderately to much better improved their symptoms. If you want to up your energy, though, stimulants might be a better shot. Just keep in mind, though, that this is not always amenable with pacing and that negative results have also been reported. Vasodilators. Few patients, 10 to 16%, reported moderate to much better improvements using vasodilators such as sildenafil, L-arginine, and or citrulline. Antioxidants. Despite clear evidence that reactive oxygen species are increased in ME/CFS, the antioxidants did not fare well. Only about 10% reported moderate to much better improvement with oral or liposomal glutathione, an alpha-lipoic acid, with its 5% significant response rate, was similarly disappointing. The newbies. Some of the newer treatments, rapamycin, GLP-1 agonists, plasmapheresis, fecal transplants, stellate ganglion patch, psychedelic drugs, etc., were not assessed. Hyperbaric oxygen therapy, or HBOT, was, though. Not many people had tried hyperbaric oxygen therapy, only 37 people, but almost 30% reported that it moderately to much improved their symptoms. Not many people had tried nicotine patches either, 25 did, and 24% of those reported it moderately to much improved their symptoms. The disappointments. With the acknowledgement that the vagus nerve stimulation field is still emerging and significant questions remain about dosing and the type of machine to use, it was still disappointing to find that only 14% of the 132 people who tried it reported receiving moderately to much better results from it. Despite the fact that butyrate levels are low, butyrate-producing probiotics, tried by 27 people, did not fare well, only 7%, but had not been tried much. Metformin has been much discussed, and 140 people tried it, but only 14% reported that it moderately to much improved their symptoms. Symptom trends. When it came to which of the top 20 treatments produced the best outcomes for specific symptoms according to the NAS calculation, some interesting trends emerged. NAS, which measures positive results but does not assess higher degrees of efficacy, suggested that if you want to treat fatigue, then the best things are pacing, 83%, stimulants, 72%, warning, IVIG, 55%, natokinase and lumbrokinase, 50%, manual lymphatic drainage, 45%. If you want to treat PEM, then pacing got 63%, IVIG got 47%. Not many treatments for PEM, though. If you want to treat brain fog, then stimulants, 77%, pacing, 71%, Mestinon, 57%, IVIG, 56%, natokinase, lumbrokinase, 50%, low-dose naltrexone, 42%, PEA, 35%, prescription anticoagulants and or prescription antiplatelets, 35%, vitamin B12, 33%. If you want to treat POTS, fluids and electrolytes, 72%, beta blockers and ivabradine, 66%, compression stocking, 64%, Mestinon, 57%, IVIG, 56%. Many, many treatments for POTS. Okay, and then it's listing brain fog again. I'm not sure why, but I'll just go with it. Go with the flow. ADHD stimulants, 77%, pacing, 71%, IVIG, 51%, natokinase and lumbrokinase, 50%. If you want to treat unrefreshing sleep, melatonin, 34%. I got to give that a try. The survey did not assess many sleep drugs, though. Overview. This is the most extensive survey of treatment results for ME/CFS and long COVID we're likely to see for quite a while. How happy you are with the results may depend on how deeply you want to dig. A 20% response rate, moderate to much better, indicates that for every 5 people who tried a treatment, one received at least a moderate effect, suggesting that extensive investigation is required. On the other hand, the fact that 62 treatments had a 1 in 5 chance of producing moderate results means plenty of options do exist. The study didn't assess brain retraining, which is open to anyone. The fact that most of the better treatment options involve drugs indicates, though, that this is not a do-it-yourself illness. I like that. Not a DIY illness. And that a doctor who is willing to take the time and trouble to try different approaches is essential. And good luck with that. Looking to the future, one wonders if the promising showing by immunomodulators, such as IVIG and Maraviroc, brain-impacting drugs such as ketamine, and the combination of guanfacine and NAC, mast cell-impacting drugs, such as the combination of H1 and H2 antihistamines and ketotifen, and anticoagulants will play a larger role. With IVIG and Maraviroc producing relatively high percentages of patients who reported feeling much better and with few side effects reported, immunomodulatory drugs may be the drugs of the future. Note that several large studies are currently assessing IVIG, Maraviroc, and other immunomodulators in long-standing COVID. Ketamine's ability to increase neuroplasticity suggests that psychedelic drugs currently being assessed might be helpful, and makes one wonder again about the focused ultrasound machine Jared Younger is testing. Given their decent showing, one has to wonder what improved antivirals might do. Supplements pretty much bombed, unless they were paired with drugs, in which case a few proved helpful indeed. Despite the obvious gut dysregulation, the short list of gut enhancers assessed did not appear to move the needle much. The poor showing by most of the mitochondrial enhancers suggested, as several recent papers suggest, that there's either more to ME/CFS than mitochondrial disruption, or that the wrong treatments were tried. It's too bad, though, that rapamycin did not make the list. And I would also add that there seem to be several distinct subsets of ME, some of which respond more, perhaps, to mitochondrial enhancement than others, such as the 1 in 5 strong responders to oxaloacetate in a previously discussed study. This Open Medicine Foundation study, which began in 2023 and 2024, highlighted the rapid evolution of treatment options as a range of new therapies: rapamycin, GLP-1 agonists, plasmapheresis, fecal transplants, and psychedelic drugs emerged, many of which had not been previously assessed. Let's hope the Open Medicine Foundation makes these surveys a regular occurrence. Health Rising's quick summer drive update. Thanks to everyone who has helped Health Rising reach 56% of its goal in its quickie summer drive. This was a massive study, and it's a massive blog. Don't I know, being the narrator. This blog turned out as blogs often do. It got bigger and bigger as time went on, and I found more and more to dig into. This blog, which produces lengthy posts that delve into the details of the subject, ultimately focused most of its attention not on the paper's text, but on one of its appendices. If you want that kind of detailed attention, we're the blog for you. Please support Health Rising and keep the information flowing. And at this point in the text version of the article, you can see a link where you can choose to give one time or make monthly contributions of any amount. And thank you for listening.